CliffCentral.com. It's already starting to wind down. Do you realize that Saturday next week? Ooh. Saturday next week is December. Does that make you happy or does it make you nervous?
Well, I don't mean to name drop. It's making me happy because I'm going to Global Citizens.
Are you going?
Yes.
Oh, see, you've got tickets, huh? You're going to see your Beyonce, your
hero. Oh, guys, I don't want to start weeping, but of course I was stalking Beyonce's team, Beyonce's art director, and Beyonce's publicist officially in the country.
Of course, don't be embarrassed.
No. Yeah, her publicist was having dinner in Sandton last night.
Oh.
And she was silly enough to geotag where she was.
You bitch. I don't move.
I will now geotag hotels around the restaurant she was at.
Yeah.
And figure out where exactly she's staying. Oprah's team is on the way in the country. So, like, all of these people are coming.
Look at that.
So that's what I'm excited about in December. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about a lot of things, and very few of them have to do with Beyonce.
I would have figured.
But this morning, there's lots to talk about in the news, and the Burning Platform, which is brought to you every week by Nando's, is a perfect opportunity for you and for me and for everybody else to get our heads around some of the more complicated situations that are going on politically, socially, some of the stories and the current affairs world that may or may not affect you directly. But at some point, you're going to bump into someone and they're going to say, hey, can you believe what happened with Pravin Gordhan at the State Capture Commission? And you're going to go, unless you listen to The Burning Platform. Then you're in luck because Catherine Child's on the line. And we're going to find out from her what we need to know this morning. Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Good, yourself?
Good, excellent. Where are you? It sounds like you're on a yacht.
I wish I was on a yacht. I'm just back from holiday in Cape Town, and I'm at a coffee shop, because even though I live in Rosebank, I have dodgy signal, so...
That's all right. It sounds nice and clear. All right, so first things first, I'm looking at an agenda here. Pravin Gordhan has been the big story this week, right? And he's been the big story for two reasons. First of all, he's giving his testimony at the State Capture Commission, and second of all, the EFF have decided to aim their guns at him. So what's going on here? I mean, what's really happening?
Wow, the EFF really decided to go all out at Pravin Gordhan this week. So he was testifying in the State Capture Commission until yesterday midday at the Tissot Blackstar building, the owners of Sunday Times. They have an event company, so it's in the eventing company, nowhere near the newspaper. And they have been protesting outside that building. It was so loud. What I will say about EFF is they have stamina. They're not like the DA protesters who, when they saw Duduzani Zuma, Zuma's son, at court, got all excited. The EFF are hardcore. They have been protesting all week. Malema came to address them and called Pravin a dog. I mean, he was really disgusting. He called him the dog of white monopoly capital, blamed state capture on Pravin Gordhan, and then said Pravin Gordhan's daughter has been getting all sorts of government deals, which turns out not to be true.
It's completely made up. But let's just start at the beginning, because the real reason that the EFF seem to be so upset is because they've all started to have a rather difficult PR exercise ahead of them. They've got mud on their faces because the VBS scandal seems to get deeper and deeper and uglier and uglier. And it appears that Julius and Floyd have got their feet and their noses and their heads so deep in the trough that all of their promises about being men of the people and standing up for the little guy and being the foot soldiers of the revolution are just complete nonsense. So there's that side of things. They're obviously embarrassed and they need to have an enemy. And this is what the EFF has always done, right? They've always found themselves an enemy. And now it's Pravin. Ironically, Pravin saying that Jacob Zuma was at the center of state capture. Jacob Zuma was the reason that Julius Malema left the ANC. He was their lightning rod for the longest time. He was their enemy. Now, why Pravin? I'm confused. What has Pravin done to them, or what have they done to him?
I'm not actually sure why it's Pravin. I'm not sure it matters. I think it's the politics of deflection. It really is. The whole week we've heard how terrible he is. And the EFF knew that an article was coming out linking them directly to funds from VBS. So we knew that the money from that bank, which was a bank of the poor, mostly in Limpopo, we knew that money had gone to Brian Chivambu. Now, this week, there's a journalist, Polly van Veg, who shows, well, it's gone directly to Malema. It went to the house he stayed in Sandton. And she sent them questions on Monday to ask for their right of reply, because she can show how the money went to Malema's cousin and then to his house, which is now owned by the EFF. And they start fighting with Pravin. So it does seem like at least part of their strategy is deflection. I mean, just some of the things they said. There are no roses in a war. There is blood in a war. When you are fighting Pravin, when you are fighting Cyril, they will not in exchange give us roses. So, I mean, he's calling for war. He's calling his supporters ground troops. And it really just does seem like he's trying to get the limelight and have us not talk about how he stole from the poor.
Yeah, I mean, he's also calling for war. He's speaking in terms like a general who's about to go into battle. First of all, how many people did the EFF manage to pull out of the unemployment line to go and join them in their complaints and their protests outside of Tisa Blackstar the other day?
It was like two and a half days of protests.
Yeah.
There seemed to be about 300. They were bussed in, so they brought them in big, huge buses. But what was interesting is a few journalists in the building went down and chatted to them, of course, and some of them thought they were protesting against white monopoly capital, against the media. They didn't actually know they were protesting against Pravin. And this is quite common. If you ask protesters at rallies why they're protesting, they often can't tell you. I mean, I've learned that.
Yeah.
So it was clear that they were bussed in, but man, can they sing for like 7 hours.
Well, they must. Do you think they get a T-shirt? Do you see what they get at the end of it? Because that's always the most interesting thing for me is how desperate people are that they'll do this, spend the whole day there for a free lunch in a polystyrene tray and a T-shirt.
It's usually lunch and a T-shirt, although they were keeping McDonald's and the garage shop very, very busy, so they didn't get free lunch, but they got a red T-shirt. And perhaps... And this is me...
Well, the price has obviously come down, that's all.
Something to do. I mean, if you're unemployed day in and day out for years, maybe it's interesting to make a racket for hours on end.
It's kind of disconcerting. All right, but Julius's talk here has also been directly at the commission. He called the evidence leader a bastard, which is something that I believe is actionable.
Yes, so according to the terms of reference of the actual commission, which is a legal document drawn up to guide it, if you make disparaging remarks about the commission, you could face 6 months in jail. And I mean, he was more than disparaging. He said they should get out of the building and suggested Tiso Blackstar was benefiting. And he was really, really disgusting. He accused everyone who's been at the commission of lying and said he'll go there and expose everyone's lies.
It seems a little... Why are the EFF so desperate? Is it because they've been caught out in their own lies here? Is it because they've been seen to just be greedy like the rest of the politicians? Or is there something else going on? Because he said... I mean, he keeps bringing up white monopoly capital, which we've all already figured out was a Bell Pottinger term that was made up, and completely we were disabused of the use of that word by President Cyril Ramaphosa not so long ago. He said it's absolute nonsense, which it rightly should have been called from the start.
I actually don't know, and I'm not going to pretend to know, but my guess is as the state capture inquiry continues, there'll be dirt on Malema. I mean, it just seems like it could happen, given how angry he is about the commission, referring to the bastard in charge of the commission. I think it's one, he's just trying to stay in the media and get attention. He's brilliant at that. He knows elections are coming up. He knows how to make headlines, and he knows what his followers lack. But perhaps there's more dirt coming as well.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Pravin Gordhan's testimony, if that's okay. He spent 2 days in the witness stand. He testified about the dismissal of Nhlanhla Nene. What did you take away from this? Is there stuff that we didn't know that we're suddenly able to get behind and figure out?
I just think what was quite interesting was just the atmosphere that they were facing, that there was so much internal fighting in the ANC, and there was such targeting of him. I mean, the Hawks were going after him, Zuma was going after him, and there was just such factionalism. And I think we know that happens, but it's an insight into the fighting in the ANC. So, and just how much flack he got for doing his job. So he was finance minister. They started looking at why SASSA social grants were being paid by CBS. Was there a cheaper way to do it? Could the banks help? How could we save money? And Bathabile Dlamini went and wrote to Zuma and attacked him. So it seemed like and said he wasn't a revolutionary and he wasn't trying to transform the economy. And it seemed like as he did his job, he just got attacked from all sides all the time, month in and month out, and from his own people, from the ANC.
He said he had no relationship with the Guptas, because that's another thing that has been asserted by the EFF, that he was friendly with them and he met with them and he was part of that whole state capture coterie, Musa Benziswani and all of that stuff.
Well, he says he didn't meet with them. He didn't go to Saxon World. I mean, he was quite funny. He actually said he didn't go to the Shabin and have a look for the Shabin. But he does admit that he had met them. So they were present sometimes at those lovely New Age breakfasts that were sponsored by the state, and he would have to go as finance minister and speak. So he says he didn't meet with them. He didn't go to the infamous Sun City wedding of where they were so racist and one of the Gupta's daughters got married. He just met them kind of as part of his job, but he says he was never friends with them or doing business with them. Unlike some of Lema's cronies.
And then he spoke about the offer to Mkhabisi Jonas, right?
The money that was given to Jonas by the Guptas.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, he did detail a lot of what we really, really know. And I didn't catch that part of that hearing.
Yeah, it was basically about that $600 million to take the finance job, in addition to the $600,000 in cash that he was offered on the spot. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that you would see in a mob movie.
It is the kind of stuff in a movie, the way he details how this all happened. I mean, he explains why he was fired. So he's refusing to back down on getting involved in the Gupta's bank accounts being closed. And so he just gets fired, and he stated in the commission yesterday that he found out on TV. He also said the minute they arrived in London to go and sell the country in an investor roadshow and get money for us, he said he'd hit the tarmac on Heathrow. He was still at the airport when they phoned and told him to return. So it really seems like he was constantly fighting his own party. I don't know how much time he had to actually do his job.
All right. Yeah. Go ahead.
He says Zuma was very, very dismissive of him. So when he complained about bad expenditure, when he tried to do his job, when he pointed out that the report that showed that he was in part of a plot to get rid of Zuma, Zuma just didn't take him seriously. So, I mean, he just did not have the backing of the president at all.
Must have been a hard place to work. I mean, it doesn't sound very inviting particularly stimulating, and when you're constantly having to watch your own back and everyone is an enemy, that's not very helpful.
It sounds awful. So now that he's facing all these insults, he's like, that's part of his job. He doesn't mind, but they must come and he said he's quite happy to be criticized. I think he's used to it. He's used to fighting. But he has said he's willing to be criticized, but the EFF must come under oath at the commission and criticize him under oath and give evidence for what they're saying.
Right.
Which I don't think will happen.
All right. Well, speaking of mobs and companies and people having to change their story, I mean, one of the big things that caught a lot of people's attention this week is the Momentum story. And, you know, a very large part of me is thrilled that this happened, because we're sick and tired of seeing insurance companies taking people for a ride and finding every possible excuse to not pay out for people who've been paying their premiums diligently for years and years and years. And it certainly seems, on the face of it, you know, there's some part of me that goes, these greedy bastards, look at the size of their head offices, look at the kind of profits they make. There's a new insurance company popping up every other day because we need them in this country. And they don't seem to look after us as well. But then another part of me says, actually, a private company has its rules. If you don't follow the rules, you don't get the money that they promised you. It's all in the contract. And I'm not sure where I stand on this. The reports are that Momentum has offered this poor woman, Natalie Ganas, 2.4 million rand. Her husband was hijacked and murdered. And there was huge social media outpouring outpouring and uproar. And they've now decided to backtrack on their original position, which was that they were not paying it out because they hadn't received some blood test or some kind of voluntary information that he was meant to have given them about his blood condition. And they're now paying the money out. How could they have better handled this, and how could they have better handled the media?
Well, I think if they just had paid it in the first place, I spoke to another actuary who has his own insurance company, and he said the way it looked to him is that they really were looking for a reason not to pay out. Now, this is someone from inside the industry. Because what happens is you die, and they then, let's say, well, this is a very common thing that people do. They take out a disability cover if they get a disease, and then 3 months later they claim for cancer. So what the insurer will do is they'll be like, maybe they actually had cancer when they took out the policy and lied, and they'll go back and check medical records, which are quite easy to get. And so often the way that they check is to look for fraud. This person died in a car accident, and actually they were a paramedic, but maybe they said that they were a secretary. So they're trying to catch people out who've deliberately lied.
Right.
But what they actually said in this case is this guy died in a hail of bullets trying to save his wife. There was no logical reason at all, and he's speaking from inside the industry, for them to go and ask about his blood sugar. Like, it just didn't make sense. And he said it certainly came across like they were looking for a reason to pay. Had he died of diabetes or a heart attack, which is linked to high blood sugar at times, it would have made sense for them to look for that.
Sure.
But when there was no dispute about how he died, the fact that they looked really does, even to the industry, look dodgy. And so I think Momentum had what was coming to them. There's such a thing as accidental death insurance from hijackings, crime, falling, being struck by lightning, car accidents most commonly. And usually they will pay for those things if there's no dispute. When they try and look at your medical record not to pay for accidental death, it is dodgy.
Well, I mean, that's the reason that you and I take out insurance, right?
Absolutely. You take it out. And I think what was made everyone so angry here is that really Clabby from 702 previously got involved. And from what she found out, he wasn't trying to hide information. So he took out the insurance. He said, you can have my medical records. You can check my previous insurer's records where they've got details of me. You can speak to my doctor. And he was actually quite open. So it's even disputed if he was really trying to lie about his blood sugar, because he provided them a lot of information from the word go. And what they have admitted is they didn't weight his premiums. He had very low premiums. So had they done their homework in the beginning, he would have had higher premiums. But, you know, you take insurance for these things, and then they don't want to pay you because of some loophole, when actually, in his case, he'd made a lot of information available.
Right.
So I think Momentum had what was coming to them.
Yeah, and I saw their CEO on TV, and she was like, oh, no, we were always going to pay. And I thought that was also bad position to take. You should at least admit that you screwed up.
The media strategy was so bad. First of all, they had another CEO on Eusebius's show on 702, and he was a disaster. So first of all, just putting your CEO on air, I mean, they're not media trained, they're not necessarily the best at communicating, they're not like you know how to communicate. That was the first disaster. Then he had all these lines like, every death is tragic. So, I mean, he was clearly reading from a legal script. So they don't take communication advice. They speak to their lawyers, and then they give you legalese and just nonsense. I mean, he was terrible. So then I think they got rid of him, and they had a female CEO, and they had a deputy CEO, and they were a bit better. But, I mean, once again, it's you get the sense that they're reading from a legal script and that they're just trying not to get into more trouble. And I don't think companies they need to train their CEOs on crisis communication or keep them off the air.
Yeah, and hire a spokesperson who knows what they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, I just don't know who was worse. Was it the Tiger brand CEO after the listeria was linked to his baloney?
Yeah.
Or the Momentum people? They were equally bad at trying to shirk responsibility on air.
I just want to go back to one thing that you mentioned almost in passing with the EFF story. Polly van Wyk is the one who's managed to figure out. She works for Scorpio, the Daily Mavericks investigative unit. She's managed to find the links directly to Julius Malema and the looting of VBS Bank. Do you, as a fellow journalist, have sympathy for her because she's being targeted personally now? You see Floyd Shivambu going after her with a viciousness that we haven't seen for some time. This is very scary for a journalist. I mean, she's an ordinary citizen. She doesn't have blue light brigade to protect her. She doesn't have bodyguards like politicians do, like Julius does.
I mean, I do have sympathy. I don't think politicians and I don't think people even like Trump should be attacking the media. I mean, at the same time, I think Pauly's profile is growing tremendously, so it's probably good for her career. And that's because she's doing fantastic work, doing a lot of investigation and really showing how the EFF steal from the poor. I also think that, and I may be wrong, but often high-profile journalists, and she has become high-profile as a result of her excellent work, they get threatened and they get all this nastiness on Twitter, and perhaps they need to go off Twitter, but they're unlikely to be attacked. Like, it's just too, it's going to look too obvious if someone actually physically attacks them. So that's often the thinking.
You mean in the real world? So Twitter's one thing, but the real world is a totally different thing.
Yeah, people don't often, and it's easy on Twitter to attack people. So I'm not sure whether or not she's had to get bodyguards, and it has happened. I mean, there was a City Press journalist who had bodyguards for months after he exposed fraud and corruption at the water department. They attacked his family. They threatened to attack his family. So it does happen, and I hope it won't in her case. But certainly, she's got a tough skin. I think she can take all the criticism on Twitter. And by them criticizing her and making personal attacks and just being ugly, it shows that they've got no way to defend themselves from the truth of what she's saying. It exposes them further, and it almost proves her point. It shows that her data is strong. They really, really were corrupt. Because right. All they've got is insults.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much. It's nice to talk to you, Catherine. Always good to see you and or to speak to you. And I hope we'll speak to you again soon. Have a good day today. Let's hope you can get your work done. Let's hope you can get your work done without too much noise.
There's no EFF today, it seems. I'm really glad. Protests have stopped.
Very
good.
Thanks so much. Catherine Child and our update on the Burning Platform this morning. Brought to you by Nando's. All the stories you need to be paying attention to today.
Oh, wee. It's always just a heated week.
Well, has there ever been a quiet one?
No. You
pull in here and go, nothing to talk about today. All right.
Can we look forward to the day, please?
Yes, let's get into it.
Things are going into order.
This is pretty funny. Have you heard this spelling thing?
Well.
Have you heard about this? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. There's always that one kid in class who is just a bit more rebellious than the rest. Let's put it that way.
Love that. So we're going to start with words that end in A-N. You yell out a word, I'll write it down. Let's see how many we can get. Go!
Fan!
There's a good one.
Man,
that's another one.
Lesbian.
Words that end in A-N. Anyone, words ending in A-N.
Lesbian.
I heard pan. Good.
No. Faith said lesbian.
All right. No big deal. Faith said lesbian. Hold on. Good. We'll write that down. Just a word. Not a big deal, but we'll move on. We'll get some other ones.
What is a lesbian, sir?
What's your word? How do you... All right. If you liked another girl, that could be...
I like Olivia. Am I a lesbian?
Well, if you like Olivia, you could be, sure.
I like Olivia. I love Olivia.
I like Olivia, too. Am I a lesbian?
No, it doesn't work that way, Philip. You can never be a lesbian.
No fear. I want to be a lesbian.
Me, too. We
can all be lesbians. Okay, let's just move on. Let's try words that end in O-N.
Prostitution.
What did you say?
Prostitution.
What is prostitution?
What is prostitution? Let's say prostitution is when you work in the street and you get paid.
I want to do prostitution.
No. All right. Moving on to words that end in R-E, but let me just have a second here to think if nothing, there can't be. So shout out words that end in R-E.
Crack whore.
That is fantastic.
So it's just that one kid. Just that one.
I love that about kids. They don't care. I mean, obviously that's made up, but I just love how children think. And they will always... You know, there's that great story of, like, the Pope is coming to visit that Catholic school?
Mm-hmm.
And he comes into the school, but before he comes, the nuns are all running around, and they check that everything's ready for the Pope's visit.
Okay.
And there's this one little kid, let's call him Sia, in the class, who always is a bit of a troublemaker.
Mm.
So the nun, the mother superior, comes into the class, says to the nun who's the teacher, all right, let's just, the Pope's going to come here. We're going to give him, show him how the kids can spell. Okay, great. So Everybody, this is how it's going to work. The Pope will point to you and you go, good morning, Your Holiness. My name is Mary and I can spell cat. And you go, cat, and then you sit down. Cool? All right. And then they all go, yeah, no problem. Cool, we're all good. Let's do a practice round. And Mary does cat and Brett does bat. And Sia, they look at Sia and they go, Sia, you know you must choose an easy word and just do what we said. So he goes, no problem. He goes, my name is Sia and I can spell dog, D-O-G. He sits down and they go, oh, thank God, all right. So they come in and the Pope is there and it's a huge fanfare and the Pope comes into the classroom with Mother Superior, with the teacher. Everybody's a little nervous except Sia. And the Pope goes, good morning, children. They'll go, good morning, Your Holiness. He goes, who are you? And he points to Mary, and Mary gets up and she stands up straight. And she goes, yes. Your Holiness, my name is Mary, and I can spell Matt, M-A-T.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, very good, Mary, very good. And she sits down. And he points at Fred, and Fred gets up. And Fred goes, good morning, Your Holiness. My name is Fred, and I can spell bed, but Edda.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pope goes, very good, Fred, sit down. So Fred sits down. And then the moment of truth.
Uh-oh.
He points to Sia. And the Mother Superior, she's rubbing her rosary beads. She's praying. She's
doing her last Hail Marys.
Please do not let this go the way that I hope it will go. Oh, I hope it won't go. So Sia gets up and he's got a big smile on his face. And he goes, who are you? So Sia goes, good morning, Your Holiness. My name is Sia, and I can spell chrysanthemum.
Uh-oh.
So Mother Superior interjects and goes, Christ, you can't! And the Pope goes, Jesus, give the child a chance.
Gareth, no.
That's where it comes from. All right, anyway. Quincy Jones.
Thank you for that, because best believe I won't start using it. I'm waiting for that dinner party. Oh, yes.
Imagine you standing up and saying, I can spell chrysanthemum. Yes. All right.
Yes, I would.
Quincy Jones and David Letterman, believe it or not, were talking about Oprah back in 1985 before anyone knew who she was.
It's quite funny to listen back to this now, given, of course, we know her and what she's done.
Well, she's one of the biggest names in the world.
And to think about back then, no, she was just starting out as a journalist. No one really knew who she was.
Yeah, no one had any idea. And there's Quincy Jones, David Letterman, talking about her. This is the great Oprah Winfrey, right?
So auditioning his new fiance for
bride to be.
That's bride to be, and that's Oprah Winfrey from Chicago. She was a talk show hostess out there.
Yeah, now that's an interesting story. The other lady that we saw in there is, of course,
Seeley. That's Whoopi Goldberg.
Right, right. Now explain the woman from Chicago and how she got into the film.
Well, it was in Chicago, out there to testify of Michael Jackson's lawsuit for plagiarism trial, supposedly. And I stayed up all night, so I was walking around pacing the floor, turned on the TV set at 9:15 in the morning, and I saw this lady and said, felt to myself, there's Sophia, and didn't even know whether she could act or not. And so we asked to get a videotape and send it to Steven, and there she is.
This is the luckiest woman on the face of the earth, then, isn't it?
And talented, too.
Yeah, she does a very nice job in there. Yeah. Now, how many...
So Quincy Jones cast her in a movie.
Mm.
Wow.
And that's how everything started, was The Color Purple, and was a big, big movie back then. They're actually going to do another remake of the movie, but this time they're adding, because it's big on Broadway, so they're making the musical version of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you know, as they were referring to her, starting out in Chicago, they couldn't even remember her name. It was Oprah Ofrey. They didn't even put her on the movie poster. And Oprah retells a story of like going up to Steven Spielberg and knocking on his door and saying, hi, Mr. Spielberg, here's the thing. I just signed on this new show. It's my own show. It's going to be my name. And, you know, they're making it national because in the States they have
right.
No shows that go into their own.
They're mostly little citywide broadcasts. Yeah.
And she says, no, it's going to be national, so there's a lot of people behind this, so can my name go on the poster? Stephen was like, no, who are you? No one knows you. We can't, you know, take up space on the poster with your name. They put in an actress who was big at the time, and Oprah often reflects on that, saying, yo, things will humble you in life. But look at where she is now.
Yeah, yeah. That's how it all started, huh? All right, well, while we're talking about people who've really blazed the trail, Michelle Obama has released her book, which everyone's talking about at the moment. What's it called? Becoming Michelle?
Becoming. Because do you remember that was part of the two major deals that the Obamas signed after leaving the White House? They signed a big Netflix deal, which is, I think, worth $60 million, and then both the president and the former first lady signed a book deal. So this is half of the book deal, with Michelle releasing her memoir, and the president is still going to release
it. Right, so she obviously, the biggest place to sell books in America is on Oprah's book club, so she went on there and she spoke about it. Listen to this.
Did you feel a pressure being the first black family? Because, you know, we because we've all been raised with, you've got to work twice as hard, to get half as far. And before you came out, I was saying, meticulous, not a misstep.
Do you think that was an accident?
Yeah, I know it was no accident, but yes. Did you feel the pressure of that?
Absolutely. We felt the pressure from the minute we started to run. We talk about that and just how, first of all, we had to convince our base that a black man could win. It wasn't even winning over Iowa. We had to win over black people, because black people like Dandy, my grandparents, once again, who I understand the context, they never believed this could happen. They wanted it. They wanted it for us, but their lives had told them no, never. Hillary was the safer bet for them because she was known. You know, the opening your hearts up to the hope that America would put down its racism for a black man, that I think that hurt too much. And it wasn't until Iowa, that when Barack won Iowa, that people thought, okay, maybe so.
Did you believe in the beginning? Because you say in the beginning
you didn't believe.
No,
no. Well, one of the reasons, the other reason I said yes was like, okay, we're going to do this. He's going to lose. And that is that.
Wow.
Well, isn't that amazing, right? I mean, that's really admitting the whole, because people always go, oh, if you believe it, you can achieve it. And she was like, no, I didn't believe it. I was hoping it would all be over and then I could go back to my life. We could say we've tried. It's the best we could do.
Mm.
She wasn't preparing to go to the White House. She wasn't doing what Hillary was doing before 2016 and saying, this is it. It's in the bag.
Mm.
Let's decide on what color the Oval Office rug is going to be.
This is an incredible move for Michelle Obama, because it, from what I've been reading about the book, and I'm waiting for it for a Christmas present, TikTok. From what I've been...
Who are you expecting to buy this for you?
Oh, okay. You know, yeah, I'm just a great person in your lives.
Yeah. Buy it. Stop being so cheap.
From what I'm seeing and reading about the book, she really is humanizing the entire experience of being in the Oval Office and being in politics in a way I don't think we've ever heard or experienced before. There's a part in the book where she talks about how there was an attempt, because of, you know, there's so many attempts of assassinations or kidnappings or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That happens to all presidents, yeah.
That largely the public doesn't hear about, because they understand that that would cause more hysteria out in general public.
Sure.
And how there was one particular attempt that someone shot into one of their windows in their living quarters in the White House. So this person specifically knew where the living quarters were, and they knew exactly what they were doing. They were trying to kill the Obamas.
Wow.
And because the windows are so thick in the White House, they're all bulletproof, and there's several panes of glass. It's not just one thin sheet of glass. It doesn't just get fixed in an hour. So I think like three or four days had to pass before the window was fixed. And she said just merely seeing that shattered glass every single day, wow, as she was waking up just to make a cup of coffee or has taking the kids to school. How's that as a reminder that, oh yeah, great, you're trying to do this work, but someone out there hates you.
Someone wants to kill you.
Someone wants you dead. And that's why she says also in the book that as much as she respects President Trump in his position and really has nothing against the guy, the one thing that she'll never be able to forgive him for is how much fuss he made over Barack's birth certificate, knowing how much destruction can be caused by people not just, you know, being in the presidency, but by famous people speaking out and the influence you have.
Right.
So she said after Trump was hounding them, constantly, you know, where were you born? Let's see the birth certificates. There was a huge spike in attacks that were angled against them. So she said to target my husband, my kids, we were always fearful after that. Security always had to be beefed up. They would always get reports that, okay, don't go to this hotel because we heard there's something going on there. Or no, First Lady, you can't leave right now because cars need to be restructured or the layout needs to be redone because of safety. She says, based on that, simply, that was one of the toughest things. So she said she'll never be able to forgive Trump for that. Yeah.
But well, I think it'll be an interesting book. I haven't seen it yet, but who knows? There might be some interesting revelations, and also like just the life of, because a lot of people wonder what it would be like to be president of the United States, and not just to be the president, but to be his wife, to be his kids.
Mm.
And if she can give us some insight into that, I think a lot of people would be fascinated with it.
She lays all of it out. They struggled to have both their kids. They had IVF. She admits that both she and her husband go for marriage therapy regularly. And also they're very lighthearted things as well. Like she writes about how Malia, who's their elder daughter, had to go to prom and how she desperately asked her parents to ride in the car of her prom date because Secret Service protocol is that the first kids are not allowed in any other unsupervised vehicle. She was like, can I just be normal? Can I just have this one experience? I'm in high school. This is a memory I'll always want.
She wanted them with her in the car?
No, she, Malia, wanted to ride in her partner's car.
Oh, okay. But they wouldn't let her.
Well, they eventually somehow compromised. The typical White House fashion. The partner's car had to be screened.
Yeah.
And Michelle lovingly
imagine
says,
being that guy. Yeah.
Having to drive up to the White House.
I'm taking Malia Obama to the dance tonight. Oh, man.
But wouldn't you be freaked out?
Oh, I would be. I'd be thrilled. Are you kidding?
Oh.
I'd love that.
I think you'd be nervous because even just meeting your partner's parents is nerve-wracking.
Of course I would be nervous. I was nervous at my matric dance thing, my prom, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
But imagine if you've got the president's daughter as your date.
No.
Hell yeah.
And then he had to drive up to the White House to go and pick her up and use the same driveway that is used for official state visits.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you are driving up where the president of France was there.
And he probably had some ordinary car, right?
That's it. That's it. And Michelle lovingly said, look, I can't tell you what to do or what not to do, but I'm just saying, as young kids go, you might think, you know, your prom night is the time to experiment. You might want to smoke weed for the first time. You might have condoms in the car. Well, I'm just saying, this guy has to go through Secret Service. So anything that's in the car will get revealed. So just know, if you want to do something, try a better way to hide all of this.
Okay,
so it's quite a funny book.
It's quite
a
cool mom then. All right, so here's something frightening.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Women have been putting Vicks Vapor Rub in their vaginas. And now healthcare professionals are warning that they should not do this. Experts are urging women not to clean their vaginas with Vicks Vapor Rub after a bizarre internet trend has compelled many to experience tingling in their genitalia.
Not us already scrunching.
No, listen to this. This is for real. Online forums and blogs claim the ointment, that's Vicks Vapor Rub, intended to soothe an irritating cough, can boost women's sex lives, clean the intimate area, cure thrush, and even maintain a pleasant odor in the vagina. This is not your department.
Far from it.
Ask the Google machine about Vicks Vapor Rub and vagina, and maybe try page 2 because everyone is appalled at this story and it's taken up most of page 1, and you're met with an alarming number of blogs and forums that suggest the ointment can be used in your lady garden. Do not put Vicks on your genitals. This is terrible.
I'm pretty sure there must be something, you know, on the packaging that says for external use.
Yes, only. That's exactly right.
Why on earth?
Oh. Don't do it.
Ah.
Who thought this was a great idea?
Doctors have warned women, just in the last couple of days, not to put cucumbers in there, in another bizarre and dangerous trend that is sweeping the web. Dubbed the vagina facial, I kid you not, this craze involves inserting the peeled salad staple into your intimate parts before twisting it around for approximately 20 minutes.
Oh.
Bloggers claim the fruit's high vitamin content sanitizes the genitals and gives vaginas a wonderful odor.
Oh.
This is very dangerous.
No, I
very dangerous.
Might be crazy enough to do that.
Dr. Vanessa McKay, a gynecologist and spokesperson for the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, has told women to cut it out. She says the vagina contains good bacteria, which are there to protect it from infections. Mm. Disturbing that through extensive cleaning can lead to infection, such as bacterial vaginosis or thrush and inflammation. Use plain unperfumed soaps to wash the area around the vagina, not inside it. Gently every day. All right, she's answering calls. Every day. If you want it to be all tingly and hot down there, you can buy lubes that do that for you. Granted, they won't clear your stuffed nose at the same time, but you won't harm yourself either. So there's an important bit of useful information. All right? Don't be an idiot. All right. Anonymous is on line 6. Do you want to go to Anonymous?
No,
who,
sure.
Who in the world doesn't, right? Anonymous, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I normally call in.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to say Anonymous this time because this is, I did this personally.
All right, go on.
Okay, I normally deworm twice a year.
Deworm?
Deworm, yes.
Mm-hmm.
When my air starts to itch.
Yes.
And this other time, it itched. Part of the warming session, so I put Vicks in my ass, and it took the itching away.
You put Vicks in your asshole, and then the itching went away. Hmm.
Yes.
How deep did you go?
No, I didn't go deep at all. I just rummed it.
Did you use that Vicks for other stuff afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
For my child's piss and everything.
Oh my God! I hope you washed your hands thoroughly.
I do.
All right.
I do.
Good Lord.
So there's some fact to that big story.
There's a lot in your story, actually. I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah, enjoy the day, guys.
All right. Enjoy your day. Jesus, I don't even know where to go with that. How's that, huh?
I really tried not to judge, but I just don't understand. But also at the same time, don't knock it till you've tried it.
No, don't try it, please. Some of this is very dangerous.
All I'm thinking about is...
Listen, stop it.
If you rub Vicks just even on your hand, you get this burning sensation.
That's a tingling, yeah, it's not good. You put that on internal...
Asking for trouble there. You are absolutely asking for trouble.
All right, let's turn our attention to more pleasant things, shall we?
Okay. Do you want... Well... Just as we wrap up the year, can I give you what is now deemed the official word of the year?
Yes.
And this, I think, is quite telling of the times that we're living in.
Didn't Leanne give us a short list the other day?
Oh, did she?
I think so.
And the number one word of the year?
Do
you still remember that?
There were a whole lot. Just hang on. Let me think about it.
Okay.
Some bullshit words. No, I can't remember any of them suddenly. But give me the word of the year. You ready?
Word of the year, 2018, is toxic.
Really?
Talk about a sign of the times. Now, this is based on Oxford Dictionary and as well just based on how often the word is used. And it's no surprise what has been one of the biggest buzzwords this year.
Don't know.
Toxic masculinity.
All right.
With this entire hashtag Me Too thing. So that is our word of the year for 2018. Mm. Let's remember that in that way. There was a 45% rise in the number of times the word was searched and used in this past year. But as we also talk about the sign of the times, Gareth, you also often talk about how right now is the best time in our lifetime that we could have been alive.
In any time in human history, right?
Really, because now new scientists have been able to figure out the worst year ever to be alive on Earth? And if you care to know, it was the year 536 AD. That was possibly the worst time to be alive on Earth.
What year?
536 AD.
Hmm.
And they compare that to the year 1349. That was after the Black Death wiped out half of Europe's population. And 1918, when influenza killed up to 100 million people. But this is supposedly the worst time to be alive, simply because of ash from a volcano plunging into Europe, the Middle East, Asia, causing a blanket of darkness that basically spanned 18 months. This led for temperatures to plummet.
What a horrible year.
Crops to die and humans to starve to death. So if you're having a bad day.
536 AD, huh?
Yeah, just think about that. Are you right now... Well, where was the place where the volcano just recently erupted? Yes, as long as you aren't there. You aren't covered in ash,
well,
wherever you are.
Wasn't that the major... That was Krakatoa, wasn't it?
Oh, I should be asking you that. I don't know.
Krakatoa was... Yeah. That was the massive eruption of Krakatoa. That's why the Earth was blanketed in ash.
Mm.
I'm telling you. I think it was 536 AD. I'm fairly sure. If anyone knows more than I do on that, I'd be interested to find out what you know. So yeah. That's the worst year to have been alive.
Worst year ever. In 540 AD, there were two more eruptions. 547, there was also a major eruption. In 536, there was snow fell in China. Temperatures dipped between 34 and 36 degrees. That was the coldest decade in our living history.
That was the real dark age.
Properly so. Crops failed. People starved. 541 AD, there was a plague known as the Plague of Justinian, which basically wiped out a third to one half of the population of the Eastern Roman Empire. So once again, just a reminder, if you think you're having a bad day, at least you can eat some food.
Wow.
At least you can see the sun. At least you can grow some crops.
So they couldn't even see the sun.
Mm-mm.
It was all dark.
For 18 months straight.
That's how much horrible
was
time.
In the sky.
Imagine how many people died. I mean, it must have been terrifying for them because they didn't understand astronomy or geophysics or tectonic plate moves. Any of that stuff. They didn't know why it was happening. They thought God was coming to punish them.
They didn't even have great medical advancements.
No, there was nothing.
One day you're sitting with John, then John just passes.
He just dies right in front of you. If he wasn't already killed by a wild animal or another person. Or God, what a time to be alive, huh?
Right.
Yeah, we take 2018 so for granted, and we're coming to the last month of this year. Imagine being around in 536 AD. What a shithole world. Our ancestors really suffered. They all suffered. They had horrible, horrible lives. Huh?
I do not want to be. Firstly, given who I am right now, I don't think I would have even survived then.
No. No, you would not have survived. I don't know. I mean, maybe you would be resourceful. You're smart, but...
No,
would survive. All right, here's a message from Clint. He says, speaking of Black Friday, it's obviously a silly idea to waste your money on things you don't need or would never buy otherwise. I have ridiculously large run-flat tires on my car. Speaking about 17K for a set of four, I'm now having to change them. We'll put the average person back for a few months. A certain tire store has 50% off any tire from their brand. Now, that is worth it. That's not a kettle or more stuff. I think that's a good point. Yeah, if you have those tires and they've got 50% off, that's a good time to buy.
Yeah.
And then someone complaining about how Gord Laws sounded terrible yesterday. I don't know what that's all about.
Oh, shame.
And then someone saying, yes, I just saw a picture of Fikile Mbalula. He does look like a grandma.
But on Black Friday, someone just reminded me as well that there's also Cyber Monday to look forward to.
Is that just online?
Well, it's great deals that you get on digital equipment and.
Oy.
So just once again, another ploy to go out and buy more things. But they've actually been, there's someone who's speaking out on behalf of a fraud product management company
yeah.
saying, folks, as great as these deals are, just be aware of how they're already tracking and seeing more trends of criminals going into the online world and stealing passwords, creating their own fake deals on a banner ad, and you'll click on that thinking, oh, can't miss out on this. Meanwhile, they're able to steal your details and also just potentially unsafe connections. That's tricky as it is, that's something to also look
for. You know, we were talking about this the other day. If you're still scared of using your credit card online, then you should be a lot more scared about going into the real world, because there's probably a lot more danger in the real world than there is online in terms of credit card fraud. Of course, you've got to be careful, and there are some sites that look as dodgy and fishy as they actually are, but you're likelier to be ripped off in the street or at the ATM or in the shopping mall than you are at an online store with your credit card. I think you're probably safer online. That's certainly my experience.
And I don't mean to make it sound quite doom and gloomy out there, but I was chatting to someone yesterday who works at an anti-human trafficking organization.
Ooh.
And she was speaking about this is the time of year where human trafficking also spikes up. Children are at shopping centers with their parents. Parents are overwhelmed by, I need to get to the store before it closes. I need to buy this. What color of this should I get? Meanwhile, your child could be lured away, you know.
Really? Are people looking to steal your children even? Good God. Oh.
Once again, it's not all doom and gloom.
It's a dangerous world
it
out there.
It really isn't out there, but there's way more happening.
I'm very excited. We're going to speak to Enhle Mbali, who is... who is an actress. She's been planning a tribute to the legacy of the late statesman Nelson Mandela at his centennial and wants you to be part of it too. We'll find out all about that. The Enhle Cares Foundation. She, of course, is famous in her own right for a number of things. She's also Mrs. Black Coffee. So we'll find out all about what's going on with her, where she is, what she's up to, and also about how you can get involved in the centennial celebration. And the Enhle Cares Foundation. All of that is coming up next, right here on CliffCentral.com. Don't go anywhere.
CliffCentral.com.